We have certainly deteriorated our macroeconomic environment over the last few years. There is a public debt problem in the world. China has to do more. All countries have gone into overdrive when it comes to debt. Africa is the one that borrows the least in the world.
Hello everyone, welcome to Development Reimagined's easy to digest video and podcast series, Africa Unconstrained, supported by Quartz Africa, an essential online source for understanding the forces shaping our world. Our aim with Africa Unconstrained is to explore African perspectives on the continent's new era, especially in the context of a post-COVID-19 world. If you don't already know Development Reimagined, we are a leading, independent, and African-led international development consultancy with our headquarters in China and with offices in Kenya and the UK. Our mission is to provide new ideas and solutions to deal with the complexities of global poverty and climate change, and it's a mission our diverse team really strives for every day. I'm Hannah Ryder, Development Reimagined CEO. And without further ado for this session, I'm really excited to be here with our distinguished guest, Professor Carlos Lopez, to help reveal his unique perspective on Africa's 55 varied economies and how to protect and revitalize their growth in a COVID-19 context and possibly with China. Professor Carlos Lopez is a Bissau Guinean economist. He's currently professor at the University of Cape Town Mandela School of Public Governance, a visiting professor at Sciences Po Paris, and Chatham House Associate Fellow. Previously, he was the head of the UN Economic Commission for Africa. Now, Professor Lopez, I want us to start off our conversation with a number. If there was one number that you think every African should be aware of with regards to Africa's economies in a post-COVID-19 context, what would it be and why?
I would say it's the forecast that the IMF presented in April this year, which was supposed to give us a performance of 21 countries with 5% or more growth for 2020 in the continent, and how much those hopes have been shattered by COVID-19, with the latest prediction that actually points in the direction of a -3.8% growth for the continent. So this is really a disaster. And what I think is important for us to retain is that it's not just 2020 that is going to be bad, but also the subsequent years because of the long-term undercurrents that are related to this pandemic.
Indeed, it's such a difficult time right now for African economies, not just because of having to deal with the direct effects of COVID-19, but also these broader economic challenges. Now, obviously, as a result of that, Professor Lopez, while we know that every African country has got a different debt profile and financial needs going forwards, maybe we could explore and reveal an African perspective on debt a bit more, and especially in this COVID-19, world. Do you feel that there is an African debt crisis now, or a growth crisis, or both?
Well, I think we have certainly deteriorated our macroeconomic environment over the last few years. There was a turnaround since the beginning of this century that created the conditions for us to grow at a more sustainable levels than before. And certainly part of that growth story was linked to our very low debt to GDP ratio. And we know that in the last 5 years, it has deteriorated, it has increased. Now we are approaching 60% debt to GDP ratio, which is very different from where we started at the beginning of the century, which was about 20%. Now, this being said, there is a public debt problem in the world, not an African public debt issue. And the reason I say this is because, you know, we have completely changed the rules that regiment global governance, to the point that since the 2008-2009 crisis, we have seen the introduction of a number of non-orthodox measures to counter the devastating effects of such development. And one of these developments is precisely the fact that all countries have gone into overdrive when it comes to debt, and particularly the OECD countries that have surpassed by far the 100% debt to GDP ratio. In a case like Japan, it goes all the way to 200% debt to GDP ratio. So it's really not spectacular to have in countries that are in the situation that most African countries find themselves, trying to basically access finance. And what we know for sure is that by far Africa, in relation to the size of its economy, is the one that borrows the least in the world. We know that access to capital is extremely difficult because of risk perceptions. And we know that this debt to GDP ratio has increased significantly, mostly because the concessional lending is no longer available at the percentage levels that it was available before. Just to explain for people to understand is that, you know, although African Development Bank, the World Bank, the IMF, all the international financial institutions have lending windows, these lending windows are attaining historical levels when it comes to lending to Africa. People tend to forget the other dimension of this, which is the fact that Africa has more than doubled its GDP. And therefore, in relative terms, this is not enough to continue to fund even with the levels that were there before the year 2000. Therefore, there are only two options for African countries. Either they try to stimulate their economy with a much more robust fiscal pressure by increasing, you know, how much they collect from their economies, and some countries have been successful in doing so, or they have to borrow. And when they borrow, in fact, they have to borrow at levels and interests that are much higher than anybody else in the world. So we have this paradox developing right now in the world where we talk about concessional lending as something that is, let's say, special for developing countries, for African countries. But in fact, what is left in terms of debt classification to grab is very little. Whereas the countries that are supposed to basically go to the market and pay the price of normal lending are the ones that are getting concessional because of the stimulus packages of their central banks. They are getting negative interest rates and sometimes even, you know, outrageous yields for, you know, just lending them instead of making money out of them. So this is a paradox that has become a systemic problem. And it is a systemic issue that needs resolved, not in African terms, but in global terms.
Yes, that makes a lot of sense, Professor Lopez. It seems that there is a real need to reframe and rethink the international financial architecture. It's clearly not working for African countries in exactly the way that you've described. Now, while we know that we can't help but talk about the world's second largest, and in some reports, the world's largest economy, when we talk about Africa's economic future and also the financing, I'd like to move on to understand your insights on the Africa-China relationship, and again, help reveal and chart forward a look, an African perspective for our viewers and listeners on the future. In this respect, do you think African countries should be trying to get more or fewer loans from China? Or should they be pushing for direct investment, public-private partnerships with China, or going a completely different route? What's your advice and suggestion?
We know that Africa's external interests are mostly related to commodities. And we export commodities more than transformed goods. And as a result, we are very dependent on the volatility of prices for commodities. And we know with phenomena like the pandemic that we are currently experiencing, these commodity prices become even more volatile. And as a result, Africa is really in a situation where in order to fix and transform its economies, it requires to count much more on structural transformation. And part of that structural transformation is actually modernizing economies making sure that we have a fiscal approach that is much more commensurate with the size of our economies. If you look into the rebasing exercises that most countries have embarked upon and some have already concluded, we have realized that we are much larger in terms of economic size and we are much more sophisticated in terms of structure of the economies than we thought we were. And of course, a lot of people celebrate that. But on the other hand, that comes with some obligations in policy terms. The first obligation is that we need to increase our fiscal space by making sure that we collect more taxes. Take the example, the extreme example of a country like Nigeria that has a collecting capacity of about 6% of its GDP in taxes, which is almost like a scandal when you know that the world average is 35%. And that is because of the rebasing exercise revealing how much dependency the public resources of Nigeria have from the exports of oil. Now, what really defines our relationship with China is what I just described, is that we need to make sure that if it is going to be a strategic partnership, it has to be a transformative one that is going to help countries get out of this conundrum. Is it the case so far? Well, the jury's out. What we know is that China has been very vocal about supporting industrialization in the continent and has been diversifying its investment in the continent in the right direction, no doubt. And I think it has been far more generous than other bilateral actors in their engagements with Africa. I say this because if you look into the debt profile of the continent, you'll see that there is a dominance of China, not because China is exploiting Africa, but because China is available in terms of capital to Africa. Others are just absent. And of course, you know, we can't blame that the Chinese are there when, you know, Africans need capital. What we also know is that the average interest rates from the Paris Club are much higher than the lending from China. So China is basically positioning itself between concessional lending by international financial institutions and aggressive commercial lending to Africa. So it's in the middle of territory. And, you know, I think it's very welcome by Africans. We will want more, not less of that. And we want, obviously, China to be much more generous in terms of mixing its lending with other types of interventions. That's no doubt. But I want to say also that Chinese efforts towards Africa are far from the levels that people normally imagine. You know, it's about 4% of outward FDI from China, which is equivalent to what China does for Pakistan. So if we put it in political terms, I'm sure that the Chinese will agree that the importance of Africa is higher as a continent than the importance of Pakistan as a country. From a geopolitical perspective, market perspective, you can throw any indicator. Probably they will agree. This is a very important strategic investment for China for the future. Therefore, China has to do more. And the Africans also have to be capable of exercising agency, negotiating better, and making sure that in their engagement with China, it's not just about the lending, it's not just about FDI even, it's not about trade, which occupies most of the commodities story that I was mentioning. It should be about how we construct alternatives for the future of global governance as well. And, you know, we can start right there with debt and the way we deal with public debt.
Thank you, Professor Lopez, for joining our Africa Unconstrained session and for sharing these insights and views with us. It is very important that our audience understands what an African perspective is on these issues, so we really appreciate you speaking with us. On behalf of our audience, if they would like to understand your perspective in more depth, follow you, where should they turn to?
Well, I think a good starting point from my perspective will be my book, Africa in Transformation, which basically talks about eight biggest challenges from my perspective that the continent is facing. And one of them One of the eight is the relationship with China. And also my different social media engagements that can be found in my website, www.africacheaterrun.com, which, you know, by name defines already what my perspective is.
Perfect. Thank you, and thank you to our audience. Please do follow us at www.developmentreimagined.com and on Twitter at DevReimagined, as well as our partner Quartz at www.qz.com/Africa. Thank you all for joining, and see you next time.